Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there, welcome to the Dr. Nina Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, here to welcome you to the post-diet revolution. That means no more counting calories or carbs, no more thinking about food all the time. It really is possible to lose weight and gain health, all without ever going on another diet. If you'd like to join me today, the number here in the studio is 818-602-4929. And it doesn't have to be anything specifically about food, weight, or body image. It can be whatever is weighing on you, whatever's bothering you, because food is not the real problem. It's not what you're eating that's the true issue. It's what's eating at you. And so when you deal with that, everything changes. That's when you free yourself and win the diet war. So last week was July 4th, Independence Day, and we talked about declaring independence from binge eating, declaring independence from focusing on food, independence from feeling bad about yourself, your body, and your life. And I started to share my top seven keys to break free from binge eating. And these are the seven things that help you do away with, you know, those root issues that cause eating problems, the things that are eating at you. And when you deal with these seven keys, you find a new way to relate to yourself and the world and to food. So because I got a lot of callers last week, thank you all, callers. I always love talking to my callers. I was only able to talk about one of those keys to liberation, and so I'm going to keep talking about them today. So the first one last week that we talked about was how to deal with disappointment. And today, liberation key number two, it's about getting more comfortable saying no to people. So do you often agree to do things you don't want to do? Do you feel like you give in too easily? If so, I'm going to teach you how to say no with a lot more ease. But first, it's important to identify why it's tough to set boundaries with other people. And here are some very common reasons why it's hard to say no. One is you feel guilty, as if it's wrong to choose yourself, or selfish. You feel like a burden, as if it's asking too much to choose what you want if someone else wants something different. You don't want to seem difficult, as if saying no makes you difficult and too much trouble. You don't want to upset anyone, as if you're responsible for the feelings of others. Maybe you're afraid to hurt someone else's feelings, as if what another person wants, thinks, or feels is more important than what you want, think, or feel. Maybe you fear rejection. Maybe people won't like you. They won't want to be your friend if you disappoint them, if you want something that they don't want, or if you even, you know, say what you want and it differs from them, they're going to retaliate. And you know, and that's really one of the last ones. You fear retaliation, as if people will reject you, hurt you, or abandon you if you displease them in any way. So I imagine one or more of those resonates with you. So think about which of those most fits your situation. Now, what does this have to do with food and eating problems? Well, if you say yes when you really want to say no, what happens to your underlying resentment towards the person making the request? What happens to your anxiety about doing something you don't want to do? Or all the other feelings you might have about a situation like this. When you don't express emotions in words, you're vulnerable to using food, maybe for comfort or distraction, you know, and other food issues, right? Binging and purging as a way of symbolically ridding yourself of feelings, conflicts, emotions, or restricting, not eating, as a symbolic way to deny that you feel anything or need anything. Or getting upset at yourself for your weight. That's a big one, right? You know, instead of, hey, I'm upset at this person who's inflexible and doesn't want to do what isn't even interested in doing what I want to do. No, that's too threatening. So you get upset at yourself instead for your weight. So how do you avoid this? Simple, only not so simple, by saying no when people ask you to do something you don't want to do. And that is definitely easier said than done. So I'm going to teach you some steps on how to say no more easily. So step one, you acknowledge the other person's request. You say, yeah, I know you really want me to do this. I know you really need me to do blank. And then step two, set the limit. That doesn't work for me. So let's use an example. Imagine a friend asks, okay, awkward situation, a friend asks to borrow money. You say, step one, you know, acknowledge the request. I understand you're in a tough place right now financially. Step two, set the limit, but I make it a rule not to lend money to friends. And that way it's not personal. It's your rule, these are your boundaries. It feels like you're less rejecting, and it's just a little bit easier. Another example, imagine you hate horror movies more than anything in the world. Like, you can't, horror movies freak you out. They just disturb you. You have nightmares afterwards. You hate horror movies. But your friend wants to go. Your husband, your wife, your partner wants to see the latest super scary movie. So before you commit to a night of hiding behind your hands in the movie theater, you say, you know, I know you'd really love to see that movie. I know you love horror movies, but those movies give me nightmares. I don't enjoy them. How about seeing something we both like? Okay, so that's step one. Step two, acknowledge the request, set the limit. And step three, take your own side. Don't apologize. Don't make excuses. Don't justify or explain. Do set limits. So instead of, yeah, I know there's something wrong with me. I don't know why I don't like horror movies. Like, I really should. Most people like horror movies. I don't know what my problem is. No. Don't apologize. Don't justify. Don't explain. That leads to step four, which is give yourself the right to have rights. You have the right to set boundaries. You have the right to your needs. You have the right to value your wants, your time, your interest, as well as the needs or wants of other people. So when you're comfortable with your rights, when it's good, when you have the right to say, you know what, no, not so much, without feeling bad about it, without expecting retaliation, without fearing that something bad is going to happen, when you take care of yourself by saying no, you are much less likely to comfort or distract yourself with food. So that's step two, how to say no to people. Step liberation key number three, you got to silence your inner critic. What does your inner critic sound like? It sounds like this. See if any of this sounds familiar. You're not good enough. You don't deserve to be happy. You're such a loser. You're never going to lose weight. No one likes you. You need to stay away from people. They're going to realize what a weirdo you are. Sound familiar? Something like that? Ouch, right? Ugh. If this is the way you talk to yourself, you might use food as a way of escaping your own mean voice. Because eating can momentarily take you away from that inner critic, that part that attacks your spirit and stops you from living your best life. So now, a quick way of identifying your inner critic is to catch yourself when you talk to yourself in second person, like I did just a moment ago. You know, you're a loser is talking to yourself in second person rather than I'm a loser. So how you speak to yourself reveals a lot about your relationships to different parts of yourself. And although everybody is a little bit different, most people have three basic parts: the self, the critic and the soother supporter. So the self is the part of you that has needs, wants, wishes, emotions. When you say, oh, I was feeling so happy, mad, sad, glad, afraid, I was feeling this, that's yourself talking. The critic is the one that tells you all of your perceived transgressions. It is relentlessly critical and able to find fault no matter what. So when you refer to yourself in the second person, it's usually the critic talking. When you're saying, you know, oh, you need to do better. You really suck. You really just can't do anything right. That's the critic. So ask yourself, if this is familiar, ask yourself, does your internal critic remind you of anyone you know? And maybe someone spoke to you that way. Maybe you heard someone speaking to other people that way and internalized it. So there are two reasons why people develop super critical inner critics. One is they're criticized. They're criticized relentlessly, and they feel as if they can never do anything right. And they identify and internalize that internal critic and then start doing it to themselves. The other reason why people develop a harsh inner critic is things are too kind of loosey-goosey. There's no boundaries, there's no structure as they're growing up. Things are too amorphous and chaotic. And kids create a critic to set rules and boundaries, and usually that critic who sets rules and boundaries is super harsh. The harsher the boundaries, the more secure kids feel. And so those are two reasons why you may have developed this inner critic. Now, the third part is the soother supporter. That's the part that can be calm, understanding, soothing, and supportive. I find that that part shows up for other people, right? You could be soothing and supportive wonderfully for other people, except not for yourself. So think a moment about how you express support for others. And now think about expressing support for yourself that same way. I have a support group that meets every week, and I'm always struck by how incredibly supportive the group members are for each other and how incredibly harsh they are towards themselves. You know, so someone will say something, and you know, the group member will say, someone will say, oh, I told you, you really, you know, you did your best. It wasn't such a big deal. You have a right to feel that way. Of course you feel this way. You know, I'm here if you want to have coffee afterwards, right? They say all these supportive things to other people, but when it comes to themselves, it's, oh, you know, I just can't do anything right, or you just can't do anything right, talking about themselves. So it would be a beautiful thing if you could be as supportive to yourself as you are to others. So ideally, when you have a need, wish, emotion, conflict, something that's bothering you, you respond with comforting or soothing words instead of food. So for a lot of people who struggle with food, the I expresses a need, wish, or emotion. The self expresses a need, wish, or emotion. And then the critic attacks. And then there's nothing from the soother supporter. Soother supporter is out to lunch. That's not quite the right expression I should use, right? The soother supporter is mute, not even present, invisible. So you start to feel something and boom, your inner critic attacks. And so in the absence of a nurturing response to something painful or upsetting, nurturing from the soother supporter, you're more likely to turn to food for those things, for comfort, for distraction. And that in turn leads the critic to judge you again. How could you have eaten that? Oh, you failed again. You can't stick to a diet. What's your problem? And the cycle continues. So when you respond to yourself in a soothing way instead of criticizing or attacking yourself, again, you're going to be less likely to eat those difficult feelings. So how do you do that? How do you do that? So we're going to unlock the key of how to treat yourself in a more soothing and supportive way and get rid of that horrible inner critic. So first, imagine a courtroom. So I imagine you're very well acquainted with your internal prosecutor, your internal critic. So now it's time to cultivate an internal defense attorney. So when the prosecutor, the critic, says, you're not good enough, object, and then take the floor and demand evidence for the accusations. Evidence is evidence. Evidence means solid evidence, not an interpretation. I've heard many people tell them that they think everyone hates them. Everyone thinks they're ugly. Everyone can't stand them. Everyone can't wait to be away from them. Now, they have no actual evidence for this. They just feel this way. They just feel as if people dislike them and find them repulsive. Feelings are not facts. Feelings are not admissible as evidence. If you feel like there's something essentially wrong with you, challenge that notion. Feelings are not thoughts either. Feelings are emotions. Anger, sadness, happiness, anxiety. You get the idea. In fact, all feelings can be distilled down to mad, sad, glad, and afraid. Most feelings out there all feelings are distilled to one of those four. So if you break down any kind of feeling, it's going to be either mad, sad, glad, or afraid. So if you feel like you should be in a different place in your life, for example, that's not a feeling. That's a thought. What you really may be thinking is something along the lines of, I have some idea of where I should be in my life. My reality is not matching up with that ideal. I feel sad, or I feel bad about that. I feel guilty. I feel, you know, so you can't really feel like a loser. That's a thought. So think about, where does that ideal come from? So when your internal prosecutor, your critic, accuses you, for example, of not being good enough, don't accept it as the truth. First, what's good enough? By the way, that is subjective. That is not a number on the scale. That is not a pant size. What is good enough? And what criteria form the basis of your accusation? What makes you not good enough? Just your weight? You're feeling out of control with food? Is that a character flaw? No. So then you want to present alternative evidence to the court. Think about how you actually live your life. Now, if you're listening to me, there's likely a part of you that is proactive, a part that is hopeful, willing to consider new perspectives, new ideas. So if you've tried and failed many, many diets, as many people have. I think there was a few years ago, there was a study in England, and they found that by the time the average woman was like 45, she'd been on something like an average of 62 diets, some astronomical, just crazy number. So if you've tried and failed many diets, you are not a failure. You are just really tenacious, right? So think about the people who thought that, let's just say, one woman, she thought people hated her. She imagined they thought she was ugly, but she had no evidence for this. She actually had a lot of evidence to contradict those thoughts. People called her often, wanted to hang out with her, even complimented her on her appearance. Now, why didn't she let in this evidence? Because she dismissed it by saying, oh, they're just being nice, or they feel sorry for me. So if you think you know the motives for other people, if you think that you know what they're thinking, oh, they don't like me, or if they're nice to you, if you find a way to completely dismiss that, like, oh, they're just being nice, they're just saying that because they have to, remember, it is likely that you do not work for the psychic network. You do not know what people are thinking. But when you weigh the evidence, actual evidence, not feelings, and judge for yourself, chances are you're going to come to a different conclusion than if you only look at yourself through the eyes of that prosecutor, through the eyes of that critic. So stop punishing yourself for crimes you haven't committed. It is not a crime to eat too much pizza. It is not a crime to binge. It just means that there's something going on in you, that you need to address in a different way. It doesn't say anything about you. It just says you have a coping mechanism that really hurts you as well as helps you. And when you liberate yourself from that inner prosecutor, that horrible critic, you will feel better about yourself. And when you feel better and you're able to comfort yourself, you're not going to eat for comfort or distraction. So, liberation key number 4. And again, I want to invite anyone listening to call in. The number in the studio is 818-602-4929. 818-602-4929. I would love to hear from you and hear what's on your mind today. Okay. Liberation key number 4. Change your negative thinking. Okay, so let's talk about, we're going to call her Cheryl. Cheryl has been preoccupied with her weight for years, for decades, really. She's obsessed with counting calories. She's figuring out fat grams, measuring everything she eats, weighing herself every day. I mean, this is what is on her mind at least like 70% of the time. Then she found out that her sister-in-law was diagnosed with early-stage breast cancer. Now, luckily, the prognosis is good, and the sister-in-law is going to recover. But what Cheryl said was that she felt so stupid for worrying so much about her weight. And she told herself, it's not like you're dealing with a life-and-death situation. You don't have it so bad. Why are you wasting time complaining? And she later binged on ice cream to escape what she called those negative thoughts. And then she got mad at herself for eating ice cream. Another example of negative thinking. A friend of mine is going through a divorce, a very nasty divorce. Very nasty. And she told me that she was upset and scared, angry about her situation. She cannot believe her ex-husband is, or soon-to-be ex-husband, is behaving this way. You know, he's turned into a monster. Who is this person? She feels horrible. And then after she shared how she was feeling, she apologized for being so negative. Okay, so how do you stop negative thinking? Well, to begin with, let's question the label. Negative. Negative is a word that means to be pessimistic, gloomy, cynical. It's a general attitude and perspective on life. But before you accuse yourself of being negative, ask yourself whether this negativity, so-called negativity, is an attitude of life. Are you just sort of a glass, very much half empty kind of person? Or is it a description of an emotional reaction? Because emotions can be painful. Emotions and reactions can be hurtful and upsetting. But often people say they're being negative when they express a painful feeling. Let's name the true emotion. Don't associate emotions with character defects. You're not being negative. You're not a negative person. If you're angry, that doesn't make you an angry person. It makes you a person who's angry. If you're upset, that does not mean you're a negative person. It means you're feeling something that's painful and difficult. Cheryl was not being negative. She was actually being harsh and dismissive and judgmental of herself. My friend was not being negative. She was feeling anxious and scared and upset and angry and helpless and sharing those feelings, which were difficult, but that's not being negative. Experiencing painful feelings is difficult, but it doesn't mean you're negative or that the feelings are negative. Remember, feelings are a reaction to a situation. So what you got to do next to change your quote-unquote negative feeling is process. Process, process, process. You can't stuff down your feelings. You can't let them go, drop them, ignore them, get rid of them, positive think them away. You can't do anything to get rid of feelings other than actually feeling them. So if you're upset, you need to express it some way. Cry, yell, journal, talk to someone who understands, process what's going on. By the way, do not compare yourself to other people. Cheryl was attacking herself for worrying about her weight because her sister-in-law was dealing with a significant health situation, very scary situation. So it's one thing to have perspective and say, wow, you know what, here I'm always worried about, you know, 10 pounds, and my sister-in-law is dealing with breast cancer. Whew, that really kind of gives me perspective. I think I'm not going to be so, so concerned about 5 or 10 pounds. It's another thing to bash yourself just because you're upset about your situation. Your circumstances are different from other people. So if then you accuse yourself of being some kind of a bad person because you feel a certain way, that's not fair to yourself. Okay, so if you break an arm and someone else breaks both their arms, do you have less of a right to be upset about your broken arm just because someone else broke both their arms? No. No, no, no. You get to be upset that you broke your arm and be grateful that it's one arm and not both. Both. So how do you stop negative thinking? You stop thinking about your thoughts, emotions, reactions, and wishes as negative. They're just thoughts, emotions, reactions, and wishes. They just are. Don't call them negative, because when you call them negative, then it gets charged with negativity, and then you're going to feel yucky and bad, and boom, there's the fridge. Your thoughts and feelings need your attention, not your condemnation. Okay, liberation key number 5, learn how to soothe yourself. So I've shared this story a lot, but it's a fun story, so if you haven't heard it, you're going to like it. If you have heard it, oh well, doesn't hurt to hear it again. So this is when I took my daughter to the park, and she was off playing with friends, and I was sitting on the bench and just kind of watching them, and there were these two little toddlers playing in a sandbox right in front of me, and they were scooping sand into a pail. They're digging, having a great time, eating sand, throwing sand, just being like little 1.5-year-old babies. And all of a sudden, one of them, little boy, gets up and he runs off with the shovel. And the other baby, a little girl, bursts into tears, just starts crying. Of course she's crying. Her little buddy just left with the shovel. So her mom comes running up, like looking all anxious. Don't cry. It's okay. So the little girl continues to cry because, hello, the little dude left with her shovel, abandoned her. And her mom's like opening the diaper bag and searching through her bag, and she pulls out a box of animal crackers, and she's like, here. And she shoves a cookie towards her daughter, and she says, here, have a cookie. Whew. So I wanted to be like, no, don't do that. I really wanted to say something like, are you crazy? You are setting yourself, you are setting your daughter up for, you know, eating issues later in life. But I restrained myself. It took, I think, a considerable and admirable amount of self-control on my part. Here's why I was upset. When the mother handed out a cookie as a way to stop the crying, that little girl learned that her feelings are upsetting to other people. Her mom was freaked out and worried. She got the message that either she shouldn't have upset feelings or she shouldn't show them. But if she absolutely could not stop those feelings, if she could not stop crying, a cookie would resolve the problem. And then the more I thought about this, I realized that this interaction between this mother and this child replicated the internal process of binge eating. Right? You start to feel something, anger, sadness, hurt, resentment, and so forth. And a part of you wants to cry, hey, this happened, you know? And then another part of you resists. Another part of you goes, don't feel that. Don't have a cookie. Don't feel that. It's too uncomfortable. I can't deal. Have a cookie. And that's when you turn to cookies or whatever to cope, distract yourself. Or the other thing people do is they start attacking themselves or their bodies in another way. Instead of course, you're feeling this way. The little boy just left you and took your shovel. Of course you feel this way. Okay, so what are some other possible responses to this situation? So the one that I described, the mother was very anxious, so she was an anxious parent. Now, a dismissive parent might not even notice the girl was crying or might glance over and say, oh, you're okay, it's not the end of the world. That's no big deal. Or even they might be nicely dismissive, which would sound like, oh, just ignore them. Oh, just ignore it. It's okay. It's fine. It's not a big deal. That is actually dismissive. And when you're being dismissive to others or to yourself, you learn that your feelings are of no interest to others. And that's when you learn that your feelings are of no interest to yourself. An angry parent might say, oh, stop crying already. Stop it. It's not such a big deal. Stop. That girl would learn that her feelings upset other people, irritate other people, that people get angry if she has a feeling. And then she might grow up and get angry with herself. Oh, so mad that I feel this way. Where are my cookies? So what's ideal? Ideal is a supportive, soothing parent who would say, of course you're upset. It's okay to cry it out. Your feelings are hurt. Your friend just left you and took something of yours. That's painful. Of course you're crying. It's going to be okay, but of course you feel sad. That way the girl would learn that her feelings are worthy of her attention and it is okay to express them. And then she would grow up and be able to be supportive and soothing to herself instead of turning to cookies. So the ideal is to be that soother, supporter to yourself. Because when you can soothe yourself with words, when you can acknowledge, validate, acknowledge, and reassure yourself, hey, you know what? You don't need cookies or anything else. So ask yourself, how do you currently soothe yourself when you're upset? Cookies? Food? And where did you learn to relate to yourself this way? How is it familiar? Next, what would you say to a friend or loved one who is upset? I don't think you're going to say, oh, you're upset? Hey, I know just the thing. I know the perfect thing. Let's get some cookies. Let's go out for ice cream. And if you would say that, then this next one is for you. Here's how to comfort yourself without food. Larry from Burbank called last week and said that this has been super helpful for him. This validate, the acronym VARY, validate, acknowledge, and reassure yourself. So you validate the feeling. Of course I feel this way. How else could I feel? What other way is it to feel other than this? This is the situation. This is how I feel. Of course I feel this way. And acknowledge what it is you're feeling. I'm feeling upset. I'm feeling scared. I'm feeling anxious. I'm feeling pissed off. And then reassure yourself. Remind yourself it's temporary. I feel this way now. I'm not always going to feel this way. Reassure yourself by reminding yourself of what you've been through in the past. What are the challenges you've overcome? What obstacles have you gotten around? You did it before. You can do it again. You will do it again. Reassure yourself. And when you soothe yourself with words and support yourself through challenging, difficult, and upsetting emotions, you will feel better. You will stop eating for comfort. And I just want to say something about parents. Parents usually do their best given their circumstances and their upbringing. Their own situations, how they were raised. But sometimes their best can be harmful to their children. So it's not helpful to anybody to blame parents because that just keeps people in a victim stance, right? Oh, they did this to me and it's their fault that I'm this way. Look what they did. right? I mean, it feels very righteous, and of course you need to look at it, but then you need to get beyond that and say, you know what? I'm not going to blame them. I want to explain. Explaining why you feel or react in certain ways can be healing. It helps you understand yourself. So saying, like, I understand that how I was raised affected me in a particular way, and I learned to relate to myself, food, others in this particular way. But now that I understand it, now that I can explain it, I can work to change it. That is empowering. So we don't want to blame and talk about this happened in the past, you know, boo hoo. Yeah, this happened in the past, but the problem is not only what happened in the past. The problem is, how is that past being repeated in the present? How have you taken these dynamics that you learned from the past and repeated them in the present with yourself or with other people? When you can, in a non-judgmental, interested way, understand how the past has affected your present and your expectations, you can then tackle it and make some changes, lasting changes. And that's what we want to do, right? Diets are temporary. Diets are pretty much unsustainable. And they focus you too much on food. You got other things to do than think about food all day, right? Or feel bad because you ate a carb when you're on a low-carb diet or meal plan or whatever term you use that really means diet. And liberation, winning the diet war, the post-diet revolution that we're a part of, is about getting up in the morning and not thinking about what you're going to eat, because you're trusting yourself. You're going to make good choices. You're going to nurture and nourish your body. You have other things to think about in your life. You've got other things to do. And diets keep you stuck in a place where you're thinking about food, weight. You're in a battle with yourself. I want to liberate you from that. I want you to not think about it. Trust yourself. And believe me, it is possible. It may sound impossible, but it is possible. You liberate your life, and then your mind is filled with a lot of other things other than self-recrimination or self-congratulation for eating in a certain way. That's also not good. Don't feel good about yourself because you're eating clean. Feel good about yourself because of the person you are, not because of what you put in your mouth. Okay, my little rant is over. On to liberation key number 6. Deal with your hunger in a new way. So maybe you often feel hungry no matter how much you eat. Ever wonder why? Well, let me tell you. My youngest daughter, complained that she went through a period of she was complaining that her stomach was hurting. And I looked at all the common culprits. You know, I ruled out food poisoning, the flu, allergies, anything organic. And her stomach was just hurting all the time. And turned out she was really nervous about going back to school after the last holiday break. So her anxiety was expressed in a painful tummy. And how did I know that? Because talking about her worries and processing her anxiety, what was she thinking of? What was she afraid of? What did she think was going to happen? What was making her stomach hurt? When we talked about it, her stomach felt better. The pain stopped. So that is just one example of the emotional to physical connection. Another, believe it or not, is hunger. There really is a mind-body connection, and it can show up literally as hunger. Your relationship to food can be an expression of what is missing in your life. So think about the expressions that we use to describe a feeling of longing or yearning. You know, hungry for love, starving for attention, wanting or needing more of something, wanting or needing someone can be experienced as actual hunger. And that is such an important concept that I'm going to repeat it. It deserves to be heard again, right? Being hungry for more of something like love, attention, friendship, understanding, money, security. maybe experienced as actual physical hunger. So think about, what are you hungry for in your life that isn't food? For example, loneliness can feel like emptiness. Food symbolically fills the void. If you're sad and in need of comfort, but nobody is there to console you, you may turn to food to provide that feeling of comfort. If you're in an unsatisfying relationship, you might turn to food to satisfy your unmet needs. If you're in a situation you can't control, you may focus on your powerlessness over food instead of feeling powerless about the situation. So when you think about what you want more of in life, what are you hungry for, your actual hunger for food may diminish. So maybe you want more friends, want better friendships, want more loving, nurturing, comforting people in your life. Maybe you need more power over certain aspects of your life. Maybe you need more money, more happiness, more time. Getting in touch with what you want more of in your life helps you stop using food as an unconscious way of expressing that hunger. So again, what are the voids in your life? What needs to change? And last, what is one step you can do today to fill the void? What is one thing that you can do about what's missing in your life? One step you can take. So when you translate your body language, in this case, hunger, into wishes, yearnings, longings, feelings, needs, you don't express them physically. These are emotional needs and wishes that are getting translated into physical hunger. So your body is talking to you. Gotta listen. Listen closely. Okay, on to liberation key number 7, last one. Learn how to get over mistakes. So think about the last time you made a mistake. I got to tell you, I have an online program, Kick the Diet Habit, and months after I launched my program a few years ago, months afterwards, I got a caller. Hold that thought. Oops, I don't have a caller. Caller, where'd you go? Call me back. Okay, months after I launched my online program, I was horrified to discover a typo on the thank you page that comes up after you opt into the mailing list, right? So instead of welcome with an L, like it's supposed to be, hold on, here's my caller. Hi, caller, welcome. You're on with Dr. Nina.
Hi, Dr. Nina. I really enjoyed the show today. And at home, the last thing you said, and this is Nick, by the way.
Hi, Nick. I recognize your voice.
Okay. Yeah, I know it's late, but one thing really hit hard to me here is this problem I have. I know I need, amongst other things, to exercise, to get out and do certain things that are actually scheduled for me to do. Mentally and just supportively from people, and I can't do it. I've lost weight in my life. I've done a lot of things, you know, to do. I can't do it for some reason. I avoid it. And we were just talking about it, sitting around, and we were talking about dieting and eating and so on. And then you talked about other things that you had to do and to face it. And that really hit the nail on the head to me. And I'm calling you to any support you can give me, more specific, because if I get support from you, I'm more apt to act on it. When I talk to you, and we've talked, and I've come a long way, but this is one that I'm fighting that I really need to do.
Well, I'm so glad you called, and I am going to do my best to give you that support. I recall a conversation some months ago when you called and said that you really, same kind of thing, you really needed to do more walking, and you couldn't get yourself out there to walk. And I asked you, Nick, do you like to walk? And you said, no. And then you said you like to play tennis. Wasn't that it? You like to play tennis?
Yeah. I mentioned that, yes.
Yeah, and I so remember, it's very hard to do something that you don't enjoy. So when you say you can't make yourself exercise, what exercise are you trying to do, and do you like it?
See, that's a good one. It's nothing I, you know, I tried this. It's almost funny. They mentioned to me, my doctor said, with my condition and so on, you should do this water aerobics, they said to me. Okay? And I go there, and I'm an odd one there, but I go, and the next day, I'm sore. I mean, it really does do something to my body. And I'm just not going back, and it's really, I should be,
well, wait,
and there's something
should.
About
don't.
It, and for some reason.
Well, let's figure out what that reason is. So forget should, don't should on yourself, Nick. So you said you're an odd one out, so I'm imagining that you're doing water aerobics with a bunch of old ladies.
You got it.
Okay. So... What's it like to be in a pool with a bunch of old ladies?
Yeah, but I finally, you know, it was better last time because, as you remember, I made communication with two or three of them, where before I had no communication to any of them there. So that made it a little better.
Okay, so maybe it's hard to go there because you feel like the odd one out. And if you feel like the odd one out in water aerobics, it could bring you back to other times in your life when you felt like the odd one out. And maybe usually feeling like the odd one out can make you feel bad about yourself. So perhaps going to water aerobics, as good as it is for your body, is not good for your soul because it activates or triggers old feelings.
Yeah.
Okay. So then the problem is not that you can't get yourself there. Clearly you've gotten yourself there. The problem is the feeling of not being one of the group, which is maybe a familiar feeling for you.
I kind of enjoy it myself, I'll tell you the truth. And, It's the point is that I don't dislike it or anything. It's just a pain in the ass or something. I just
didn't choose it. Your doctor chose it.
Yeah, one of them. Yeah, they did.
Okay.
They did, and they support it, and you know, and that. And I think of other options, you know. They don't, nothing really comes through. I mean, whatever. And especially in the last week or so, I mean, the heat hasn't caused anything for me to go outside. And to be honest with you, I'd probably rather go to a water aerobics than go outside. I'm not a runner or this or that. But This gives me something to do, this one. You know, I can do it, and it's all right. It's like that's not, I don't know what is it. I mean, how would I find my secret to youth? I got to find something that would make me feel good.
Well, the answer to that.
I don't know. I mean,
Nick, can you call me back next week? Because we're almost out of time here today, but I just want to leave you with this thought. The secret is to do something you like to do. You mentioned tennis. Think about other things that you actually enjoy. Not that you're doing out of obligation or because your doctor told you to do it, but because you really can't wait to do it. And when you think about what that is, and again, call me next week. We'll talk more about it. When you figure out what that is, you're not going to have a problem being motivated.
All right. I'll talk to you next week, right? Okay.
Yeah. Call me first thing. We'll talk about it first thing.
Okay. You got it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, and that brings us to the end of our show today. Thank you so much for being with me here on LA Talk Radio on the Dr. Nina Show. I'm here every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific. If you'd like more resources from me, check out my website, winthedietwar.com. I have a lot of free giveaways. You can get also information about my online program, Kick the Diet Habit. And you can also email me with any questions that you might have that I'd be happy to answer on the air. See you next time.
You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.